Rick Tellender has written for the Sun-Times since Moses parted the Red Sea. He was featured in last night's episode of ESPN's The Last Dance, a series based on the Bulls' 98 season, the final championship, and Rick joins us now. Man, you look good last night.
I thought so, Pete, and, you know, really, it's only been since 1995. I know for you young guys, that is from back in Old Testament days, but... I used to be a young man. Just trust me on that.
All right. They opened the show last night with a press conference, and a reporter asked Jerry Krause if he was surprised that the team chemistry and winning has held together after all the backstabbing between Jerry and Phil, and he got very upset. Were you at that press conference back in the day?
I don't think I was. I don't believe I was, but I don't know for sure, because, man, I was at so many things, and it all kind of runs together. But I don't think I was there personally. That was the one where he kind of stormed off?
Yes. Yeah.
No, but I knew about it. You know, I mean, that part is for sure.
Well, let me ask Dave Ennett. Dave Ennett, were you at that press conference?
I was not there, and I was trying to remember last night. I think I was at the retirement one, but there were so many people there, I'm not even sure I could pick myself out of that shot.
Well, his first retirement, everybody was there. Everybody. I couldn't believe it. Rick, you were at that, right?
I think I was. I mean, like Dave said, he kind of implied there's games I thought I was at that I wasn't, games that I didn't think I was at that I was there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I saw Jordan live 300 times, and you know, all the playoffs start to run together. Everything does, because This is a long slog, you know.
Right, I agree.
I think I was there at the Berto Center for that one, yes.
Rick, you mentioned last night on the show, on The Last Dance, August 94 cover of a Sports Illustrated, picture of Michael missing a pitch in a Sox uniform. The headline was, "Bag It, Michael." You said that Jordan hasn't talked to Sports Illustrated since, and he is a guy that never forgets anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as I know, he hasn't yet. And I know I was still at Sports Illustrated when that happened. And as I said in the – well, maybe it didn't come out in the show, but I was talking about it later with Rich Roper when we did a podcast afterwards, that those are all my buddies there, you know, the editors, the writers, a lot of really quality people. And this is 1994. And he said that, and I knew Michael – pretty well by then. He'd been in Chicago for 10 years, and, you know, we'd talked quite a bit, like a lot of the writers had. And I thought, no, God, don't, please. That was one of the reasons I came to the Sun-Times in 1995, less than a year later, because, or just about 1 year later, because I just, if he wasn't going to talk to anybody from Sports Illustrated, and I wrote for Sports Illustrated, right, and I knew this guy, and I know what a great athlete he is, do I want to spend the rest of my career knowing? I mean, I knew when he says something, I mean, or when he's mad about somebody, you see how he creates enemies,
right?
Real or true, and boy, he will stick to it, man.
Well, my favorite moment last night, and Dave, I'm going to have you jump in a second, but my favorite moment last night was when Jordan was watching the iPad of Gary Payton talking about him guarding him in the 96 finals. MJ was laughing. I was laughing. I think that was a wonderful moment from last night.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I thought you were going to ask Dave, but I tell you, Gary Payton was, you know, the glove. We knew that, man. He was a stopper. He was a defensive guy, just like DJ Johnson for the Celtics, who was, I think, five-time defensive, all-defensive team.
Right.
And Jordan lit him up back for the Celtics. So when Jordan's just laughing, no, the glove, Gary Payton. You know, there's no problem for me. Nothing. He had one bad game against him, and I torched him. I ripped holes in the glove. I mean, that was hilarious, because you knew it was coming.
Rick, did you remember the LeBradford Smith thing? Because I mean,
that was another one I didn't remember.
Yeah, I mean, that's one where it seems like my wife turned to me and said, "Okay, he said nice game, Michael," and the Bulls won the game, and yet that somehow set him off.
Well, I mean, I'm telling you, it doesn't take much, and the thing about it is that also showed LeBradford Smith at 37 points. All these guys who play in the NBA are skilled. They can all shoot. I mean, virtually all of them. Some of the big men can't, and then Dennis Rodman can't. But beyond that, they're all capable of going off for one night, maybe two, maybe even a week. But it's the ones who can do it for a season or a career. that are amazing. And sure, LeBradford Smith, you could probably go down the list of guys. I mean, John Starks is legendary. He was a good player, not great, but I think he dunked over Michael and taunted him. I mean, all these things that you just see. Don't do it. B.J. Armstrong, I remember I was definitely at the game where B.J. had a great game. He used to be Michael's teammate. Now he's playing for Charlotte Hornets.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, that game he had a front tooth knocked out and he had stitches hanging down. I remember talking to him afterwards, and it's like, oh, God, B.J., did you actually – you know, like celebrate and everything in front of Michael. I was like,
why would you ever
like
do that? Right. Why would you ever do that? We're talking to Rick Tellender from the Sun-Times, also in The Last Dance. Are we going to see you in the last two episodes? I feel like you've been in every single one.
Yeah, my contract calls for me to be in every one of them. I have no idea. Honestly, I think I said before, I did this interview so long ago, I think I looked pretty sharp in that blue shirt.
Oh, yeah.
But took them years to put this thing together, a couple of years, and I really don't know. I don't know. I don't recall what I said. I don't recall if they asked me. I know I was getting grilled for a couple hours, and, you know, it's like a deposition when you do these things. And then somebody goes through it, they logs it, and they go through this, and they say, oh, God, look at this. This guy said something really dumb. We got to use this. And you just pray you're not that person. And so far, the director, Jason Hare, has been very nice to me. So praise the Lord for that. But I honestly don't know about the last two. They just finished them, by the way, if they're even done. I mean, those are the two they were working on in progress while the rest of these shows were running.
He just finished the final episode, I want to say, last Thursday.
Okay. Oh, there you go. I guess, I don't know how far they take this. They win the championship. They don't go beyond 98, I don't think, do they?
I was thinking, no, I think they're done with 98. I don't know. You tell me. You're in the Last Dance. But my question, and I thought about this last night, what if? Did Jordan have anything left in the tank after that 98 championship? Because remember after 93... And, Dave, I'll let you answer this first, and then Rick. Would Jordan have anything left in the tank? Did he have another championship in 99 and 2000? Did he have two more years? He was 35, right, in 98?
You're right, but remember a couple things. Number one, he still came back and played again with Washington.
But he sat out 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, he came back once, and as he said, until we have it taken away from us, don't we have the right to defend it? And you know, I mean, it's hard to imagine that they wouldn't have at least been pretty good in 99, even if they didn't win it again. And then maybe you make the tough decisions. But I wouldn't have put it past them to at least be in contention again in 99. Would you, Rick? I mean, even at
Dave, and listen, don't forget, 1999 was a strike-shortened season.
Right.
They played only 50 games that year.
Oh, that's right.
So that's 32.
Right.
You know, and I think it was at the referees. I think it might have been the referees that were on strike. Or I don't even remember. The strike, we've had so many strikes in sports. But that's 32 games you're not playing. You know, that's a whole college season. And here's the thing. If Michael had come back, he was exhausted. They had won six in 8 years. His dad had died, you know, a few years before. But if he had come back, here's the thing. He would not have played to do anything except win. He would have driven himself to the brink of over the brink of exhaustion.
Right.
He would not ever play half-assed. And I got to say, I watched him every game that I saw him play. I never once saw him play anything but ferociously. And I think you see that, and not necessarily that's even necessarily a good thing. This guy was kind of, you know, part of him, I think you see. Will Perdue said it really well. He said, you know, we never saw any emotion from this guy, hardly in the locker room ever, except anger, frustration, and a kind of cruelty because of how much he wanted to win. Now, is that healthy? I don't know, man. This might have been for his own sanity not to have another year. But if he had played, I would have put all my money on the Bulls winning a fourth title in a row there.
Well, yesterday they brought up the retirement after 93, and they talked about that 94 season. I remember that the Bulls had a good team that year, and I remember the playoffs with the Knicks. And I can't believe, you know, I've been chasing Scotty for the last 60 days, and he hasn't talked to anybody about The Last Dance. And now I figured out why, because they brought up the 1.8 seconds left on the clock in Game 3 against the Knicks, where Scotty didn't want to get off the bench. I still can't believe that.
The poor guy, I mean, listen, he was, Michael was the leader in all, every kind of way, whether you liked him or not. And Steve Kerr did stand up to him, little Steve Kerr, and he walked around with that black eye that, you know, it looked like a joke, looked like somebody had taken a black shoe paint and painted a perfect black circle around his eye. It looked like something out of a movie that, okay, let's give this guy a black eye. And to his credit, he told us immediately, he was very honest, said, yep, Michael slugged me. I was guarding him. We got in a fight, as much as it was, and he belted me. Well, I just, you know, I just think that this guy, with his intensity and all the things he was for better and for ill, his personality, this drive, what I see in this show is it's coming out, and you can either like it or not like it, but what you have to ask yourself is, if this is the price of winning championship after championship, would I want to be like this? I mean, that's what I come out of this with.
Yeah.
I really liked Michael. I enjoyed him. And I'm sure Dave, you did too. Mm-hmm. He had a very personable way, but that drive, I don't think he understands it. I'm sure he doesn't understand it. He's aware of it. But I don't think it's all that healthy, you know?
You know, the thing, just to get back to Pippen for a second, the thing that's...
Oh, yeah, I'm good.
No,
let me just say the 1.8 seconds.
Yeah.
Poor Scotty was immature. That was my point. He was not educated. He's educated, but he was not, didn't understand what he was doing. And to him, it was all of his pride on that thing. It should have gone to me. But you know what? We knew that Bill Cartwright cried in the locker room after that. And poor Scotty will never live it down. It's terrible. It's sad that he can't, but he can't. Sorry, it's done.
But here was his chance to say,
I know.
Yeah.
I know, Dave.
Now looking back at it.
I know. That was it.
Because, Rick, you're exactly right. He can never live that down. He can never. But this was a chance to do it. Just like Jordan and the Kerr thing. Just like he said, yeah, I was wrong. I called him up. We talked it out. We became better friends. That was, to me, the most surprising part of it is Scotty said, yeah, I wish it didn't happen, but I wouldn't change it.
I would probably do it all over again. Yes. All he had to say was, you know, I was immature, and it was a big mistake. But he didn't.
What? No, he didn't, and he might be incapable of it. You know, I think he could say it, and it'd probably be fraudulent. He wouldn't mean it, and so maybe that's even worse. And I think if Scotty could explain what's deep inside of him, maybe then we would understand. But for him to apologize might be him just saying, okay, I'll say what you guys want me to say. But Phil knew how much this meant to me. He knew, you know, listen, Michael wasn't there that year. And here's Scotty on the main stage, and all he'd heard, hey, can you lead this team? Can you be the number one? Can you be in charge? Can you do what Michael did? And you heard everybody say what a great teammate he was, putting his arm around guys, getting them up, getting them going. And in his mind, this was total betrayal, and it still is. Now, I can't put myself in his mind. Set. He was a great basketball player, man. He really was so good, so smooth, could do everything. You know, assist, rebound, and shoot, and defend. Oh, my God. But these little moments that reveal your character, and more than your character, I think they reveal a lot about what motivates you and what has hurt you in life. And what you have heard, this never would have happened if Scotty never played with Michael, because it wouldn't have been a big deal. Sure,
yeah.
Let Tony Kukoc shoot it. Fine, I don't care. It's a good play, and Tony made it, by the way.
Yes.
He did make it. Rick, I got to take a quick break. I'm going to keep you for one more segment because I want to ask you, Michael started crying last night on the episode, and I want to ask you about that when we come back. Okay?
Sure.
And by the way, what is the podcast with Rich Roper? Where can we find it? We can get it everywhere. What's the name of it?
It's called Chicago Six Times. Very clever. With a hyphen in the middle, six times. I think if you just dial up sometimes.com, you'll see it pop up.
Got it.
Anyway, but yeah, to me and Rich talking about this stuff.
I love it. More with Rick Tellender in a second. It's 720 WGN. Rick Tellender from the Sun-Times on the phone with us. He was in The Last Dance last night. He'll be in the last two episodes, 9 and 10. Last night, they were talking about how Michael Jordan loved to talk trash. He talked trash in practice, but his teammates were basically calling him a jerk, that he was hard to play with, he was hard to practice with. BJ said it, Will Perdue said it. I think it hurt MJ, and he got very emotional last night, which to me means he had some regret. Rick?
Well, I kind of read it as though people don't understand me. You don't understand what an ass I was, because this, I felt, was the only way we're going to win. And what he doesn't state is, okay, if you're going to play this game, sure, you're going to make a lot of money, but isn't the point to win everything you do in competitive sports? Isn't that why we're here? Not to put on a show, not to, dribble between the legs and shoot three-pointers and taunt people and do all that, even though he did it, not to dance around or anything, do commercials, but it's to win. And in that regard, it's kind of, I saw this being very almost retro. I'm not sure that people like Zion Williamson and new stars say really get it. I think that's what he felt in that moment, was utter frustration. The world doesn't understand me. They keep criticizing me, you know, even though it's not horrible criticism, but they don't understand. I just wanted to beat the hell out of everybody. Do you know that his Jordan brand, since he retired, has actually almost tripled in value? This is a guy who's 57 years old.
Right, yeah.
There's something about this that resonates with everybody.
It's just crazy. You're right. It's a billion-dollar business now, the Jump brand. Which it is. By the way, a few observations, and we mentioned this last time you were on. His mother, Dolores, just looks fantastic. And she is the reason that he got the Nike deal, because she made him take that meeting.
Yeah, well, listen, one thing that a lot of themes going through this, you know, smaller themes than the main ones, and that one is, this guy had a mom and a dad around him, supportive.
Right.
How often do you see that with a modern athlete? And not only that, he had a his dad James. I remember talking to him. I like James. He was a bit of a cad himself. I mean, he could be a wise guy and all that stuff too. He wasn't just one of these church going. But he liked to have fun. Let's put it that way. And Michael, you know, always had his tongue hanging out when he went to the rim, he did something, always. And it was a terrible thing. And I remember him telling me, kids, like, I said, what do you want to say to everybody? He said, kids, please don't do it. And the statue in front of the United Center is now inside, shows a guy dunking, and it's Jordan, but his tongue isn't out. And so the joke around there was always, that's the Terry Porter statue. Because the one thing to look off, the dude doesn't have his tongue hanging out. Well, where did he get this? He said, I got that from watching my dad when he'd be working on the car. He'd be down on the ground or whatever, you know, changing the oil. He'd say, hey, Michael, hand me a wrench and stuff like that. And he said, my dad would have his tongue hanging out the side of his mouth, kind of like, you know, biting down like it's real intense.
Right.
He claimed that's where he got it, from his dad, you know?
Right.
And when I first met him, he had a townhouse in Deerfield, I guess it was. And his mom was there all the time with him. He would vacuum and do all this stuff. And, you know, it wasn't a huge place. He had a pool table down in the basement. But his mom, Dolores, was there. The family was, it was a family unit. You know, I'm not saying it was perfect in any way. I don't know all the details. But Michael's dad and Michael's mom were very important to him. That's for sure.
Right. Definitely. Dave, you want to jump in?
Well, you know, he also made a comment last night about why he worked so hard. And he said it was something to the effect of, well, if you're going to take 3 hours out of your day to watch me play, I'm going to give it my best. Which, you know, somehow that quote struck me, because he also, as determined as he was to win, and when he has Judd Bushler saying everybody was afraid of him, as tough as he was on his teammates, he also did feel an obligation to put on the best performance he could for people watching him, which right. I think is sometimes gets kind of lost in the wash, that at least in his case, he did feel that kind of obligation.
Well, you know, Dave, I think you're absolutely right. He had this honor, if you will, between him and the paying customer, and it jived just perfectly with his own personality, which was, I don't know how to do anything at half throttle. I just literally do not. And he didn't. You know, I went through the list of games. He played 82 games virtually every season he played in the league. And even the season when he was out with the broken foot, he came back for 17 games. That's all he was back for. He played in every one of those games and all the playoff games. And when he came back from retirement from baseball, he played 82 games, 82 games, and 82 games. And every single playoff game there within those seasons, he played in his career with the Bulls, 179 playoff games, and Michael Jordan started every one of them. Jeez. Nobody else on the team came even close. LeBron James, by the way, has only started 82 games once in his entire career.
Oh, yes. My gosh.
So much for load management. Huh?
That didn't happen back in the day. Rick, you're the best. Got to run, man. Always great to hear your voice, and we'll see you next week on The Last Dance on ESPN, and we'll listen to the podcast Chicago 6 times.
Okay, thanks, Pete. See you, Dave.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, my friend. That is Rick Tellender from the Sun-Times. Business Lunch coming up after 12 o'clock, and, of course, news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.